Thank you. And through the chair, it is a, you know, thank you very much for the question. We certainly don't believe it's for naught. And for this reason, we've been asked to prepare for three distinct scenarios depending on the public health circumstance, which we've been told, of course, could change at any time. And so our readiness to move into each of these scenarios is critical. Part of the reason why I spent a fair bit describing our work in our secondary model for scenario B is that we have been testing out all the models depending on if we are opening in scenario A, but all of a sudden need to shift into scenario B and then are being told to shift to scenario C and so on. At different points in the year, not just September, not just November, but potentially February and next March, it all needs to be sequenced out now so that, you know, we're, again, trying to provide a similar type of school day for our students and our families with the least amount of disruption, knowing that we are going to have a significant amount of disruption, as well as, you know, as you've indicated, Trustee Bingham, those families that will potentially still continue to be apprehensive about sending their child to school. And we would need to, of course, continue to provide them with a learning opportunity. So we're planning for all of those scenarios for the entire school year.
Trustee Bingham,
yeah, I have a few questions, so hopefully we'll be able to crown them in easier. When you were talking about the secondary school students in the cohorts A and B, were you just speaking, Associate Director Sovereign, were you speaking of only the grade 9 and 10, or are we talking 9 through 12? Because the ministry, right from the start, said 9 and 10 will start at the schools, 11 and 12 will be remote, and I have parents who, some of them find that, but that's just really, it's out of their realm to have their children at home, 11 and 12, in certain things like the trades or with IEPs and things like that. And they're extremely concerned about the 11 and 12. So which secondary are we talking, from 9 to 12 or just 9 and 10 and then 11 and 12 remote?
Associate Director Sovereign?
Yeah, thank you. And through the chair, thank you for the question, Trustee Bingham. The ministry did put out initially for consideration, which we provided in our survey to parents, guardians, and caregivers, which would you prefer, all students in secondary school attending at least part of the day in a face-to-face capacity, or a different model that would look at potentially grade 9 and 10s having more face-to-face time with 11 and 12s continuing in remote capacity. The data is in the report, but you know, we certainly took away from what we've heard from families that the preference would be that grades 9 through 12 be provided an opportunity for some face-to-face learning. Our planning has continued with that. So what you see before you are students, regardless of which grade the course is that they're taking, there would be a face-to-face component, there'd be a remote learning, and that would rotate through. So each one of the courses that they have, there would be a face-to-face in-school component, and then there would be remote learning. So we haven't separated out 9s and 10s and 11s and 12s. I'll also highlight that the team that we have been working on this and just doing a great job looking at really complicated possibilities, which would include retimetabling an entire school for all students and all staff to put them into not only class cohorts, but entire subject block cohorts so that all four courses you would have with that same cohort. The reason why you don't see that in the report is that that would really effectively eliminate all student choice. It would quite significantly limit pathway choices. It would be very challenging to include students who might not be taking a particular course within the grade that all their other subjects would be in, and so on. So the model for scenario B that we've put forward here, and again, noting that it still needs some work around the actual times to make sure that collective agreements are adhered to, it does provide the greatest flexibility for students to continue with their existing timetables, existing course selections, and is applied for students from grades 9 right through 12.
Fantastic. There's a lot of families who will be very happy to hear that. Many of them were extremely concerned that 11 and 12 would only be online. I think there's an awful lot who are worried about the rate of students falling through the cracks this year or coming next year because they haven't had information as to how their student, their child in particular, is going to be able to get through school the way that they need to. If we're going to be going through this remote learning as well for every other day or so with students, will we still be able to supply devices and internet to the families who will be needing these? And for families who have 3, 4, and 5 children, how are we going to be able to help them if they only have one device per family at this point? So I think September is, I know it's ways off and we still have to think about these things, but there's a lot of families who still would need more help in making sure that their students, their children have the devices and the internet to keep them going for the year.
Associate Director?
All right, thank you, and through the chair. All considerations for each one of the models, each one of the scenarios, that are presented. So earlier in the evening, I did refer to the fact that our program division, our specialized services, but again, together with IIT, would continue to look at the provisioning of devices, our standardized digital environments and tools, and then look at the various aspects connected to academic success, assessment, and evaluation for the very reason that you've just indicated, Trustee Bingham, and that is we don't want students to experience gaps in their learning, and it's one of the reasons why we've provided a very robust summer learning program this summer with quite significant uptake, again, all with a view to making sure that, you know, we can bridge that gap as best as possible, and should it come that we need to move into a scenario B or a scenario C, you know, the proper tools and resources would factor into that.
Okay, excellent. And families are going to be very happy to actually hear these things, because as I said, I'm overwhelmed. I can't imagine what it's going to be like for them. I guess my final question, basically, are we going to be able to track students who are falling behind or getting to a point of feeling like they want to drop out or something ahead of time so that we can, again, not have students fall through the cracks to the best of our abilities, really keep an eye on what everyone is doing so that the parents aren't feeling extremely overwhelmed as well with all of it?
Associate Director?
Thank you, and through the chair. So as we're doing all this planning for the reopening of schools, we're always reminded of our core work. And our core work continues to be, focusing on students reading by the end of grade one, all students graduating, students improving in math. And as part of that, we are constantly applying our ways of checking in on students, tracking their progress, and really ensuring that, those gaps that if they do exist, we're able to bridge them. So it's a great reminder and something that we remind ourselves that despite all the planning for all these various scenarios for a reopening that we never imagined needed to happen, we still have our core work that is front and center.
That's great. Thank you so much for all the answers. And again, my hat's off to everyone who's working so hard on all of this. And as we go through, the more communication we can have to the public, to the families, and even to the other staff, would be extremely appreciated by all of them, I'm sure. So thank you to everyone for those.
Thank you. Trustee Buck.
Hi. Yes. So I want to touch on the cohorts again. I was wondering about families. So if we're doing every other day, is there the possibility, or is that a serious consideration, that we might have families where one day one of their children could be coming on a Monday, Wednesday, and every other Friday, and another of their child or children coming on the Tuesday, Thursday, and every other Friday? Do you mind just talking a little bit about that?
Associate Director.
Thank you, and through the chair, so work is already underway in mitigating those circumstances where, families who would have more than one child not be cohorted into different cohorts so as to avoid the scenario that you've just highlighted, Trustee Buck. We are working really closely with our INIT division because students may not necessarily be in the same school. They may be in different schools and different programs. And so our ability to determine which students are within the same household and family that need to be together, that's part of the planning work. And we know that there'll also need to be a refinement afterwards where inevitably there will be some that will be placed in separate cohorts, and those are the ones that we will address accordingly. We don't want families to have students in the elementary grades, at least in two different cohorts.
Trustee Buck?
That's great to hear that that's already a serious consideration that your staff have. One other question I have was around the timing of the cohort. So you outlined every other day And I just wondered if there was, what the rationale was for doing every other day rather than every other week for students.
Associate Director.
Thank you, and through the chair, largely feedback from our parent, guardians, and caregiver survey. And in the report, trustees will see, and I'll just take a moment and actually find the information on page 4-2. Alternate days, 45% preferred it compared to alternate weeks, which was 18% of respondents. And keeping in mind we had over 10,000 responses, we felt that was a very good indication that our school communities were preferring alternate days versus alternate weeks.
That's great to hear. I knew I had heard you mention something about that, so the 18% really stood out to me. Okay, well, I commend you. There are as many different scenarios that would work for families as there are families, but it just we can do our best only to try and address the greatest number of issues that might arise for students and for families. So I appreciate the thought and the care, and really am so thankful that we have that survey data to look back on as we formulate the plan. Anyways, no further question.
Thank you very much. Trustee Danko.
Thank you, and through the chair, I do have a number of questions that I'm going to try to just pick and choose a few, and maybe I can follow up by email with others. Again, acknowledge the work staff is doing. If you'll indulge another movie reference, it makes me think of Apollo 13. And all across every board in Ontario, we've teams trying to fit a square peg into a round hole. So when you explain the number of variables that you have considered and worked through as you developed these models, it's really impressive. And I appreciate hearing that you are collaborating through code, through the chairs meetings, but also with other boards and their teams. So thank you for that. First quick question is about cleaning. So we see that there would be enhanced cleaning needed, and I thank you for walking us through that. Are we at this point confident that we can clean, in particular, I'm thinking washrooms and those high touch points with our existing complement of staff, or is this something that we're looking to address differently?
Associate Director, and don't feel the need to do a movie reference back, but if you do, extra points.
Thank you, and through the chair, I won't attempt the movie reference. And in fact, when it comes to cleaning and our enhanced public health protocols, I will ask Superintendent Stefanian if she has any comments on that question.
Thank you. I was just waiting for you. So thank you to the trustee for the question. Certainly, and I'm going to preamble my response with a comment that the associate director has made earlier this evening, that I'm responding based upon what we know now currently, recognizing that as we have seen with COVID over the course of the previous few months, that information does change. And so information that we're sharing based upon consultation with public health may need to shift. But at this particular point, what we're hearing from public health is that our regular cleaning schedule is sufficient. So it does mean that we may need to make some slight adjustments to the work that caretakers are engaged in during the day to ensure that those high-touch surfaces like railings, doorknobs, washrooms, et cetera, are cleaned a minimum of twice per day, recognizing that if there's an area that requires attention for whatever reason, there may need to be a third cleaning. But beyond that, our regular cleaning protocols at this particular stage are sufficient.
Trustee Danko, follow up?
No, thank you for that, and I appreciate that we're going to be monitoring this as we go forward. My next questions relate to the cohorts, and I appreciate that my colleagues have already brought some of them up. One of the things that we've talked about and you've mentioned is the importance of supporting student mental health, and I'm sure staff mental health as well as we go into the school year. One thing I've heard loud and clear from parents in my communities is that children and students, they're just really missing the opportunity to socialize. So when we establish cohorts, particularly in elementary, we're potentially establishing the kids that they may interact with outside of school as well. And I'm thinking of when we have classrooms that are set, we often do get calls from parents, and I know that there are some little people out there that would really, really have a hard time if they didn't have someone they identify with as a buddy or a friend in their cohort. Is there a possibility, and I know this is so complex and you've already done so much, but is there any possibility to allow parents who maybe have a child who would really struggle if they didn't have someone in their circle, in their cohort, to identify some options, or is that outside of the realm of possibility?
Associate Director.
Thank you, and through the chair. Certainly, as indicated in the report for both elementary and secondary, we already know that as we move forward with plans in each of the scenarios, including the cohorting, that we are going to run into situations where, challenges arise for individuals, and we're going to do our best to address those. So our approach to this is to develop the cohorts using a few key parameters, such as in elementary school, keep those from the same household together. Cohort entire classes and keep those classes together. But then once that's done, there are going to be the situations, as Trustee Danko, you've illustrated, where if possible, would there be another consideration to do something? And our commitment would be we'll absolutely look at it. We'll do our best to, make that change because we don't want to add to an already challenging and difficult situation.
Thank you for that. I just know that these cohorts are going to be like our current bubbles, and if there's an opportunity for kids to play with a friend outside of school because they're in a class together, that would go a long way to helping students with their mental health, with socialization, and so on. My next question relates to our expectations or the model for remote learning, and that could be whether it's through the blended scenario B, where we have the off days where remote learning would be happening, or fully online delivery, which is option C, or if we have to transition from any of the scenarios, but there's a positive case and students have to maybe isolate along with the teacher for 2 weeks, but remote learning would still happen. Will we learn more about what that model will look like at the end of July? I know a lot of families are, anxious about that and about how will it look and how will it be different from our initial experience through COVID.
Associate Director Sovereign.
Thank you, and through the chair, as we bring forward our report at the July 27th special board meeting, we do hope to provide more information on each of the scenarios, knowing that a lot of the discussions currently are focused around scenario B. We are putting plans in place for each one of the scenarios, and we hope to bring forward more information on that at the next board meeting, and then also throughout to keep trustees informed of how we are developing plans within each of these scenarios, including the remote learning.
So more thank you. Trustee Danko, further follow-up?
Two more, and then I'll leave it at that. In terms of partnerships, I appreciate that we are working with our community partners where possible. Have we considered, in particular for older students, possibly high school students, on their off days if we do go with Model B, if our partners have space that might be available as working space for some students? And do we have space in our inventory that we could make available?
Associate Director.
Thank you, and through the chair, a wonderful suggestion, Trustee Danko, and so we'll take that away to see if we can incorporate that in terms of our further learning to provide those types of opportunities. So thank you.
Okay, last one. Well, it's maybe two together. I'm going to throw just a thought that if bell times are the same. And say we start with option A for elementary, best case scenario. What happens if we need to then modify transportation, or sorry, if we start with option B, and then we can shift to option A, but we still need to maintain some of the requirements for transportation. How can we manage that with the same bell times for elementary? And I'm going to tack on a little comment about secondary. I think if you pulled secondary students and said, here's the block that you have to be at school, and it's first thing in the morning, they would almost unanimously say, please, no. So I'm just going to throw that out there as well. But I guess my question's around how could we manage existing bell times if transportation has to be staggered?
Associate Director.
Thank you, and through the chair. So the planning currently is to maintain bell times and to maintain the transportation according to those bell times. For both elementary and for secondary, and so part of the reason for that is, again, planning for the possibility that we do need to shift between the various scenarios, and so disrupting bell times would be one more added complexity that we're trying to avoid with the planning that we're doing for both panels. And thank you for your suggestion around secondary schools. The model for scenario B that you see is an illustrative model, and as I said, we're continuing to do work around the fine tuning, so we'll take that suggestion back as well.
Thank you for the comprehensive report and answers and the continued work staff are doing.
Thank you very much, Trustee Danko. And we all hope that you will be quoted in the paper tomorrow because you had some of the best quotes tonight with your movie references. Moving along to Trustee Deek.
Thank you, and I had a couple of same questions that Dawn brought up, and I echo when I looked at the secondary with the first period being the in-class, had the same thought that having had secondary students, I know that they would prefer that the first class not be in school and that the in-school portion be later, so thank you for taking that into consideration. And my other another question is in regards to supervision, and again, Dawn touched on that as well, and that is going to be a big concern with parents heading back to work if they haven't already, and how do you supervise those children who are not in school? And so that was going to be my question as well, is have we reached out to other organizations. I mean, the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, there's all kinds. And even the rec centers, you know, with this, through the city, is there an opportunity to provide some supervision through those? And I like the idea of the older students potentially mentoring or supervising the younger students as well. So, again, I did hear that, Peter, I believe you were taking that away, so that's good to hear. With this, too, is, you know, I know that you're, you know, talking regularly to other boards. This is a worldwide phenomena. And so just wondering if we're able to learn from other countries. Are we looking at as their, and I don't know where all the countries are in terms of back to school, but, you know, are we kind of looking to see what's successful there and what's not successful? So that'll be my first actual question.
I'll turn to the associate director, but just before I do, I will mention that on the minister mentioned today that they were looking at the United States as well as Israel and a handful of other countries around the world in terms of the models that they're adapting, I guess, globally, but or their experiences, sorry, globally. But associate director.
Thank you, and through the chair, regularly, Superintendent Denemy and Superintendent McPherson, and also joined by Superintendent Dunlop and Gillies more recently, have been part of an inter-board group of superintendents, you know, sharing ideas, models, and learnings, not just from within the province, but from other jurisdictions across the country and further abroad. So a lot of the learning that's being applied to the planning isn't just local and it isn't just in Ontario. We are at the point, though, where a number of the plans that we are, you know, working on are becoming more fine-tuned and require the Ontario context, and then further to that require the Hamilton-Wentworth context in order to operationalize. So we are most certainly looking at experiences from others, but we are, for the most part, now looking at plans that are very specific to our Hamilton context.
Okay. And then my only, I was actually going to ask about clubs and teams. Is that now off the table, or are we looking at doing some kind of, bringing back clubs and teams in any way at all? Associate Director?
Thank you, and through the chair. So it will be part of our planning, and it will depend on which scenario that we begin the
Join.
School year in. So within the reports, I have highlighted, particularly in secondary, that, you know, extracurriculars may be need to be adapted in some ways, whether it's scenario A or scenario B. And much of that work will start to occur once we know which scenario that we're beginning the school year in.
Trustee Dees? Thank you. And the other thing is, I think Don mentioned too about cohorts and making sure that the students feel safe and supported within that cohort group and are building friendships. I believe I did see in this report that there is going to be a focus on that, is on building relationships. Is that correct?
Associate Director.
Thank you, and to the Chair. Certainly, in terms of supporting students with mental health and well-being, as you'll see in the appendix that's been provided, and some of the previous examples of supports and programs that we've been developing throughout the closure period for the summer and into next year. It is all with a view to support students and staff, and staff supporting students with the transition during the reopening and forging and building on those relationships. So that's a long way of saying yes.
Great, thank you. And just finally, and I know, I mean, you've got your hands full, obviously, and it's going to be some learn as we go, but I'm just wondering, again, back to partnerships, because there's partners out there that do support, you know, student mental health, different organizations, Anxiety Canada, like there's quite a few where, you know, where students or parents can get support from outside groups. So are we going to be linking them to some of these other outside supports?
Director Figueredo?
So thank you. Before I go to Peter, this is important. I sit on the advisory for School Mental Health Ontario, and last week Dr. Kathy Short and her leadership team met with directors across the province. And we always speak about student learning, achievement, well-being. We said this fall it's going to be so important for the well-being to be front and center. And they asked us for any kind of resources that would be helpful. We mentioned around resources to support the well-being of staff and how, you know, they interact with students, because what we're worried, you know, could be worried about, a natural instinct would be to let's close the achievement gap, let's get caught up in all the work we've missed, to overwhelm people. So we've asked for resources for our classroom educators to support our mental health leads and teams to really support the well-being aspect. And the other piece we know is we've had multiple partners reaching out in terms of any way they can support us. And Amber Quinn, through Sean's team, has been gathering that and supporting it. And we know also through Sharon Public Health and David Hoy's team as well. So we know partners have reached out. Again, once we know them, as Peter said, the scenario we'll be in will give us a little bit more direction in terms of how how partners can support us in the mode that we're in. But your point is well taken. It'll be essential that we focus on the well-being and relationship piece as students come back. You know how important that is when students come back after a regular summer of 2 months away from school, from the physical school, but to be away from the physical school for this duration under a pandemic will be very important. So I know School Mental Health Ontario is creating resources to really help us for our staff and our students for September startup.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Okay. With that, we'll move on to Trustee Galindo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate how extensive the presentation was. I realize that obviously we're in the planning phase and preparing for a lot of what's to come, and a lot of what we're doing is proactive. I appreciate that. One of the aspects of enhanced public health protocols that I'm curious to learn more about as it progresses is what the procedure is going to be with suspected COVID-19 cases, when they're identified and when they're confirmed in the classroom. I think that is going to be critical, and it goes hand in hand with that communication plan. It also raises questions around what testing may look like in our school board once schools open. As we know, testing has become more publicly available in the last few weeks. Now, if anything, there's very little criteria for folks to get tested. You know, they say that if you work in public spaces, if you work at grocery stores, if you work with, you know, clients, that you should get tested frequently, just to make sure that you're not asymptomatic, that you're not carrying the virus without knowing, even if you don't have symptoms. So I'm curious if there's been any consideration given to any system-wide testing that might occur at our schools, perhaps even once a month, just to make sure that, we're keeping track as best we can. And with that, I imagine that that might go hand-in-hand with a suspected COVID case if someone goes home when I mean, but that's the other thing, too. You know, it could be COVID-19. It could be the common cold. If someone goes home with symptoms, how do we differentiate the two? And are we now potentially looking at a scenario where, for safety reasons, the director of education may decide to close the school for a couple of days at a particular location if we're seeing that a few cases have come up? So I'm curious to know what the thinking has been around that, and that's my question.
Just before we go to it, I need a motion to extend by 30 minutes. With that, I'll take a motion from Trustee Galindo, seconded by Trustee Deeth. Do we have anyone dissenting against it or voting against the motion? Hearing none, the motion to extend passes, and we will go to 10:30. So to Trustee Galindo's question, Associate Director Sovereign.
Thank you. And through the chair, I will begin just by pointing out that the ministry has set, the Ministry of Education, together with public health, has set some pretty clear expectations and guidelines for dealing with either suspected or confirmed cases within a setting such as a school. At the bottom of page 4-3, there is a nugget there, suspected COVID-19 procedures as part of the work. You know, this is at, you know, at a high level, but there's a number of elements within there that detail out the type of procedure that would need to be followed. But I'll ask Superintendent Stefanian if she has anything else to add.
Superintendent?
So thank you to the trustee for the question and through the chair. Just to elaborate a little bit on what Associate Director Silvern was stating, we have been having ongoing conversations with public health with respect to what procedures will look like when and if we have a student or a staff member who becomes ill, and subsequent to that, if we have a student or a staff member who is diagnosed as a positive case of COVID-19. And again, this is the information that we have as of today, recognizing that as we move into the fall, we certainly could certainly see a shift. But really important right now, I mean, as Associate Director Silvern spoke about the cohorting approach. The cohorting approach is one of the strategies in place to try and minimize the spread if, in fact, we do have a student or a staff member who tests positive for COVID-19. If, in fact, that happens, we will have a very detailed dialogue with public health. We've been informed that case management and contact tracing are an important part of the work that we need to engage in. So if, in fact, we do have someone who is diagnosed, public health is going to be investigating the extent to which there needs to be contact made with individuals who are part of the cohort, and also making determinations around whether or not testing is required by those individuals, in addition to looking at the potential of self-isolation. As recently as the conversation we had today, we were talking about the threshold upon which school administrators will make contact with public health if we have students who are feeling ill, whether if they're not coming to school because they're feeling ill or they are at school and they begin to feel ill, at what point and based on what symptoms would public health expect communication from principals in schools? Because we know that when we look at the symptoms that were first released with respect to COVID-19, we heard about the common symptoms of fever, cough, difficulty breathing, and those certainly seem to be the most common. But we also know since that time, we've seen a number of other less common symptoms. And so in conversation with public health, how public health may direct the school board to respond may depend upon the nature of the symptoms that the child or the staff member are displaying. So certainly lots of layers, but we recognize the importance if we do have a student in one of our schools who begins to feel unwell. We need to find a private space for them to be isolated to ensure that there is someone there who is following proper procedure and who can care for them, and, of course, outreach to the family in order for them to be picked up. And there will be a direction at that point to connect with a family practitioner or public health directly, who will then provide guidance around what the next steps need to look like.
And Director Figueredo.
So thank you, Trustee Kim, for this question. You heard the second part, what Sharon has just shared around if we have a case in the process. Your other part was around screening prior to that. The ministry has provided some guidelines in terms of boards having to provide a checklist of self-screening, so we're going to work through that. That's the expectation at this point in time. People doing a self-assessment, and the board should provide it with support of public health. And the last part of your question was, could a situation unfold where a group of students or a school has an outbreak and a local school could close versus the entire district? That is a possibility as it rolls out. As I think you're seeing is more as this rolls out, that the data based on region or even based on a school could determine the mode that the scenario that school is in, so that could be a possibility. So thank you. Back to the chair.
Trustee, further comments?
No, thank you, Madam Chair. I think that answers my question. It's certainly something that I'm going to be following as time goes on. But I appreciate the work that's being done by staff in collaboration with Public Health Services.
Thank you. And moving along our roll call, I have Trustee Miller.
Hi. A lot of my questions have been addressed by fellow trustees, but I just wanted to make a quick remark that I'm very happy to hear that just supporting our students' mental health, their general well-being, their return to school anxieties in the greater context of a global pandemic is a priority. It's really nice to hear that being taken into account and you know, the implications of all of those things looked at in terms of how we plan an actual, reopening and a return to school. It's obviously far more complicated than just getting the students in the building, which is already pretty complicated, given all of the various factors. So I just wanted to comment on that and highlight that in particular, because I think that is going to make an immense amount of difference for our students on how they remember this, but also how they come back to learning, which is ultimately our end goal here. So thank you for that. But otherwise, a lot of my points have already been addressed. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Miller. Do we still have Trustee Mulholland on the line with us? Hearing none, Trustee Pagan Miller. Trustee Pagan Miller.
Hi, I'm here. First of all, I just want to say to all the people that were involved in this presentation, particularly that the research, the amount of graphs, the amount of thought that has gone into all of this is phenomenal. I'm really, really impressed. Peter, you've done a fabulous job, and so have all the staff. And I like the fact that I'm seeing pictures of how the rooms are going to look, because it reminds me of when I first started teaching, because I had such a, I had 18 kids in my first class, so it looks like that, although the circumstances are quite different. I wish that we didn't have to worry about all these health concerns in order to get smaller classes, but I like the small class sizes. I think that's going to be conducive to great learning, and I have a lot of confidence in our teaching staff that are going to rise to the challenges. I like the way you use the word challenges, because challenges is exactly what we're facing. And I think that the positive mentality, which says no matter what happens, we're going to meet these challenges. So I just want to make those comments, and I want to thank everybody involved. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Thank you, Trustee Miller. So with that, do we have Trustee Tutt with us? I believe he's still not here, or either of our student trustees. Hearing none, so I'm just going to conclude with some of my remarks. So I do want to give my sincere appreciation and thanks to staff. I know I was teasing with Trustee Danko's quotes from movies earlier this evening, but truly, the entire team has gone above and beyond. You have given this Board of Trustees great confidence tonight with the thorough, detailed plan, and not just one plan, but three separate plans and multiple considerations. Every rock was turned, every option was explored. And continues to be explored for September. And I also really appreciate where comments were made, where we remain unsure of some of the details, where comments were made, where we still have more work to do to gather input. And what I heard was a strong commitment tonight to continue to work to ensure that we have the best plan for September reopening. So I sincerely appreciate all of the work that has been done, and I want to thank all of you. I do want to note that I have heard tonight a number of comments from trustees where there was questions or concerns that related more to a provincial level. I have been taking notes, and that included money for PPE. There was questions around that. There was questions around child care plans for the adaptive model. So, for example, I know that there was a number of concerns whether or not a private market would be able to support our families on days that school is not taking place. And whether families could afford those arrangements, there's certainly a number of concerns there, and I know that Toronto School Board has been very outspoken on that matter with Trustee Jennifer Story putting a motion forward last week on that, as well as there's been a call for consistency in the adaptive model across the province. This wouldn't require a motion, but I'll just let trustees note that that in my position of chair, I do intend to write a letter on behalf of the board to the minister that does not require a formal motion. So we can include that, and I can engage trustees this week in terms of getting some input into that, just to express some concerns and also to raise what our local needs are here in Hamilton. I do have one question for staff, and that is with regards to masks. So we are, it sounds like we will be having masks introduced in and required by city bylaw, and we also see a number of industries across the province requiring masks in public places, including factories and all kinds of different industries. I noticed in the report that the current consideration was not to have, I guess, to only have masks being utilized in select categories. I'm wondering if we could have more of a, more information on our June 27th meeting with regards to what the thinking is around masks or plastic shields. Associate Director?
Thank you, and through you, Madam Chair. We will certainly take that away, as has been talked about multiple times this evening. The information continues to evolve day by day, and so we'll certainly bring back some additional information around PPE on July the 27th.
Great, thank you so much. And again, thank you for all of the amazing work as circumstances continue to change. So with that, this is a monitoring report, folks. So I am looking for a motion to approve. Trustee Officer Miller, can you remind me if I got a mover and a seconder earlier? Because I cannot remember. I feel like we've been doing this report for 2 hours.
Yeah, I don't think you did. So you'll need to just grab two trustees to do monitor. Yep.
Okay, so we'll have the monitoring report moved by Trustee Galindo, seconded by Trustee Deeth. With that, do we have anyone voting against the motion to receive the monitoring report? Hearing none, the motion passes. With that, just give me a moment. So we turn now to the next agenda item, which is a report from the Committee of the Whole from earlier this evening. Vice Chair Danko?
Yes.
Thank you.
Carol Paikin Miller.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm still here. Thank you, as Judy
Kathy?
Oh, dear. It is my pleasure to present the report of the private session of the Committee of the Whole held earlier this evening. I hope we still have quorum. That the tentative agreement between HWDSB and the following unions, OSSTF OC2, District 21, OSSTF PSSP, District 21, Elementary Teachers Federation of Ontario Huatl Teachers, for the term September 1st, 2019 to August 31st, 2022, be approved and amended as per the School Board's Collective Bargaining Act.
Thank you. I'm just, hold on a minute. I just want to make sure that we do have a quorum. So we'll have that just checking. I'm going to do a quick roll call. I think folks thought the meeting was over. Do we have Trustee Archer? No. Do we have Trustee Bingham?
Still here.
Wonderful. Do we have Trustee Buck?
Still here also.
We have Trustee Danko. Do we have Trustee Deeth?
Yep, I'm here.
Do we have Trustee Galindo?
Trustee Galindo's here.
We have Trustee Johnstone. Do we have Trustee Miller?
Yes, I'm still here.
Wonderful. And do we have Trustee Paikin Miller? No. Heather, can you just confirm? I believe we do have quorum. Do we have quorum? Heather Miller?
You have 7 out of 11, so you would have quorum.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Okay. So with that, thank you, folks. July 13th meetings. So thank you for the report from earlier this evening. That's put forward by Vice Chair Danko, seconded by Trustee Miller. And do we have anyone voting against the report from the Committee of the Whole from earlier this evening? Hearing none, the motion does pass. And with that, I'll have a motion to adjourn. We'll have it adjourned by Trustee Archer, seconded by Trustee Bingham. Anyone voting against?
Sorry, Trustee Archer is not in the meeting.
Oh, sorry. Then we'll have we'll have Trustee Danko, seconded by Trustee Bingham. Anyone voting against? Hearing none, the motion passes. Have a wonderful night, everyone. Thank you.